Welcome to Growth Marketing Camp, where we sit down with our favorite marketers to demystify growth and give you the insights to help turn your next campaign into a major success. Let's get into it.
Hey, everybody. This is Jazz Binning, co-host of Growth Marketing Camp. Welcome to this week's episode. I'm excited to introduce you to Hillary Reed, who is currently VP of Marketing at the performance branding firm Within. Hillary, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, of course. I'm actually very excited for this conversation because I was doing a bit of digging into your background, and I've got to say you've got a very impressive portfolio. You have more than a decade of experience delivering marketing and communication strategies at leading brands, and you've made a dent on many different industries. A few that stuck out to me that you actually also shared on your LinkedIn. You have helped lead marketing teams for a digital marketing agency, expanded the MQLs by 1,500% over a 9-year tenure. You've helped grow the company from $5 to $55 million in annual revenue. You've directed marketing efforts for e-commerce and B2B for a startup and have helped the company achieve 200% year-over-year growth. Right now, you're at Within. So, you know, right before we ended up hitting record, you shared a little bit about this performance branding methodology, which I really want to dig into, especially since you guys are using that as a framework for managing your clients' campaigns. But before I dig into all of that, talk to me about your career journey. What were the milestone moments of your life that helped get you to where you are today?
Well, it's a little longer because I've been around for a while. So I actually started out in newspapers as a sports writer and sports copy editor. And it taught me a lot about messaging, audiences and stuff, but none of it was digital. It was all analog. It was all, you know, you get a newspaper, you get in the morning, you pick it up from your front step and you read it. So that's changed pretty dramatically since I was in that business. But I went from newspapers to actually a stint as a college softball coach for a year. And then you just had to get out of New England. I grew up in New England, was there forever, and thought I want to go somewhere else. So I moved to San Francisco at an e-commerce company called Mercantile, which is now, like many e-commerce companies in 2005 when I joined them, is no longer. They were trying to be the next Amazon, but there aren't many Amazon. So I worked in e-com until about 2008 there. And anybody who worked in e-commerce during the recession probably has some battle scars, and I certainly did. Joined another e-com company for a few years, but one of the people I met in 2008 was a gentleman named David Rednitsky. He worked as VP of advertising at Mercantile. And when he left, he went to go found a company called, at the time it was PPC Associates. Well, I joined him there after my stint in e-commerce because I was recommending a friend, and he's like, do you want a job? I was like, sure. I've always been interested in digital marketing, which at the time was basically Google and Yahoo, like search marketing, not a whole lot otherwise. Banner ads, the flashing banner ads you used to see on the sites and stuff.
Yeah.
Facebook didn't have advertising at the time. This was 11 years ago. It feels like just the digital landscape has just the complexity, I think, is, you know, many, many, many factors beyond where it was then. Platforms, attribution, privacy, and it's just gotten so different. So I was at 3Q for 9 years. That was amazing. Tons of growth there. I was in an e-commerce startup for the kind of year in between positions that I joined Within this past March. Mm-hmm. So I've been at Within, like you said, for a couple of months.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's insane that you forget about it. I feel like, I know you mentioned it's been 11 years since then, but I totally remember like the flash advertising. I remember when most people would just read newspapers, and just looking back in hindsight, to think that this is how much marketing and just technology has changed in such a short period of time is actually insane. I have a quick question for you, especially because you were working with newspapers and stuff before. Do you feel like the foundation of marketing is consistent? Like it stayed the same, the principles of it? It's just the mediums really that have changed.
Yeah. I mean, I think the speed, obviously, the way everything is. I mean, you could read advertising like books from the 50s. We were actually talking about this the other day. I've got a few colleagues that were, the idea of influencer marketing is not new. I mean, you think of Wheaties boxes, right? Like the athletes that you used to see on mm-hmm. Wheaties boxes, or like, you know, the Hollywood stars you'd see smoking their Marlboros or Camels or whatever. There's always been a form of influencer marketing. It's just now it's so that the turnover and the feedback that you get and the data that you get can process really quickly and optimize. That's a different playing field for sure. But like some of the tenets, a good story, a good hook. I think obviously people have a shorter attention span now than they did when I was even in newspapers. But the idea of a paragraph that hooks you and gets you in and makes you want to read the rest of the story is that it's very similar to an ad where you're like, okay, the first 3 seconds have to haul you in. or on Facebook the first second, something like that. Like, yeah, like you said, I mean, the tenants are the same. It's just, I think the stakes are a little higher because the, you know, things are so congested and costs on Facebook and Google are so high and things are just faster. They evolve quicker. Even things like regulation, I mean, the privacy law is coming down. Like when the Apple iOS 14 dropped, all of a sudden people had to reinvent the way they were doing advertising. It's definitely like built on the same foundations, I think. But yeah, it's a different game for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And you're so right about that. And I feel like most people forget when I think about influencer marketing, especially I'm thinking about like Instagram, I'm thinking about even the micro influencers people are starting to tap into on LinkedIn for B2B. But it really is, we're just kind of recycling trends that have existed for decades and decades. But no, you definitely make a good point there. You are now at Within and you've been there again, like I said, a couple of months. Why did you make the move to Within? And what have you been doing since then? And what is your focus, I guess, for the next like 2 months at Within? And
yeah, so
tell me a little bit about what you guys do. What is Within?
Within is, it's a performance branding agency. We don't like to call ourselves an agency because we really, like a lot of agencies say, we really try to get into client accounts and be a business partner and align ourselves with whatever it is they want to achieve as a business, not necessarily our own KPIs. So, you know, it's an agency by any other name, but we like to think of ourselves as partners first. I have a good friend, Ada Pally, who's the head of SEM at Within, and she and I worked together at 3Q as well when I was at 3Q back in the day. And she said, hey, do you want a new job? I was kind of like, yeah, my gig in e-commerce startup was going okay, but, you know, startups can be kind of rocky. You know, I was looking for something a little, still high growth, but a little less startup-y. And so I checked out Within, and the performance branding angle is something that really stood out to me as differentiated, where, you know, you see a lot of agency websites, no matter how big they are, you could go to like a Merkle, Tinuity, a tiny little shop. You could go to any one of the holding companies and you're going to see messaging that's very, it may sound a little different, but people are all talking about generally the same thing. Where within, it's, they were really taking aim at the silos of performance and branding, which has been a really big issue for, I would say, the last like 6 or 7 years. And it came to light in COVID big time because a lot of companies were like, okay, we have to make sure our numbers are up. We don't want to lose people. We have to keep performance. We have to keep the revenue coming in, especially short term, because nobody knew what was going to happen long term with the COVID landscape. So that what had always been a pretty intense focus on performance anyway really got heightened, which left very little room for branding. So top of funnel activity, things like that. So you saw a lot of brands kind of hunker down. And I think that's one of the reasons that in a recession, even in 2008, you can look back and say, a lot of the companies that had good ideas and were brave enough to like really invest in them came out of that time. You're looking at, you know, a company like a Netflix. There's a lot of like software as a service companies that came out at that time. It was companies that were like, we see an opening. Other companies are pulling back. So we have a little bit of room for playing in it. And that something like that happened a little bit with COVID, where companies were really hunkering down and saying, we have to spend money that results in dollars immediately. Mm-hmm. Where if companies had the luxury to look outside of that, the top of the funnel was open. Taking. So what Within does, that's coming around, is saying like, you don't have to say here's branding and here's performance. Good ads and good campaigns should do both at the same time. Mm-hmm. Creative should make you like feel a way about a brand and also want to buy what they're showing you. It doesn't have to be one and the other, and that the budgets don't have to cannibalize each other. The goals should be aligned and not necessarily siloed. So what we say is we can do that for you. Some of the things we look at that are actually differentiated, I think, in my view, a focus on LTV. So it's still performance, but we'll tell clients straight up, like, look, if you come to work with us, you may see a dip in immediate performance. But if you give us the runway for 6 to 8 months, you're going to see like, it's not going to be a growth arc that kind of flattens out. It's going to start here and then hop stick up. Because what we're looking at is identifying the audience segments that are going to spend the most money in the long term. They may be more expensive upfront. They may be a little slower to act. But it's like if you were selling a Costco membership, you wouldn't want to hit the like frat guy who has the job of going to Costco for the frat party like once a year. Yep. You'd want to hit like the dad with the soccer team in back saying, okay, I got to get Capri Suns once a week for, you know, forever. So it's a matter of knowing those audiences and saying, yeah, we're going to pay a little bit more for them. Performance may, like ROI may look a little worse in the short term, but like we have a plan for the long term. So that's one differentiator. Very few agencies talk about LTV upfront like that. And another is incremental bidding. So basically like, you know, there was a whole, I want to say like maybe 5 or 6 years ago, you hear a lot about retargeting, a ton about retargeting. The thing is, it was hard to tell. People weren't really measuring, like, would those people have bought anyway if you didn't serve them ads second, third, and fourth time? And a lot of agencies have caught on to that. A lot of brands have caught on to that. But we've taken that like to an extreme and saying every interaction has to drive incremental value. We don't want to spend dollars where it's like we're just encouraging a type of behavior that was going to happen anyway or may never happen. So we want to make sure that, like, and we've got technology tuned into the bidding where, okay, like, we could do this 5 times on Facebook and spend this. But if we did it 3 times on Facebook, once on Instagram, once on TikTok, it's actually going to deliver a better result. So, like, that sense of incremental bidding is really trying to get value from every single engagement, which I was just really impressed by as a concept.
Yeah, I love both of the two different J's you mentioned. And one of the things that really stuck out to me that you just recently mentioned, it sounds like most of the companies that were most successful were the ones who really set themselves apart during COVID, because that was a time where the pressure was on. And I think if you're reading, especially on LinkedIn right now, there's a lot of debate between performance versus branding and people not understanding what they should invest most of their resources in, especially like things are getting a little bit more costly. It's much harder to figure out how to get your buyer's attention. Mm-hmm. How do you guys differentiate? What do you think are like the key things that differentiate between performance and then branding? And you mentioned that at Within, you guys try to prioritize balancing both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So I think if you look at performance, like defining exactly what that is, I think a lot of people just say the word and leave it there.
Yeah.
Where we say it's long-term, like lifetime value performance, like how much are you going to get from a customer over a year, 2 years, mm-hmm. not like, what is my report to the execs going to look like this month?
Yep.
And in COVID, I think there was a bunch of CYA going on, right? That had to be. People were worried, like, you know, can I keep my team? Can I keep my budget? We have to show performance like week over week, month over month. But what we're saying is like, you have to take a little bit of longer term view, especially because things like Facebook and Google are so expensive now. And that's not going anywhere. They're not going to get any less expensive. With the branding piece, it's like, you don't have to just evoke like an emotion. That's great. And of course, there's things like influencer marketing that aren't necessarily going to turn into direct sales immediately. But we're trying to not shorten the funnel. We're trying to say like, look, this all contributes and we can show how each touch point contributes to conversions at the end of it. You know, and the thing about branding that I think you're not going to see immediately, right? Like you're not going to say, okay, performance is dipping, but now we got to scale like that, you know, but where are the customers? If you completely turned off the faucet for the funnel, like top of the funnel awareness and stuff in COVID, now your pool is the exact same size it always was. The CPAs are the exact same or maybe a little more than they were. Whereas if you're bringing a lot of new people into the funnel and they know to look for you and they're repeat buyers and like, you know, you've got a retention program in place, the acquisition cost for those is going to drop. So like that investment is going to come through at the end. It's just a matter of being able to connect the dots. And a lot of companies aren't good at that yet still after like, you know, 5, 6, 7 years of that being in focus.
Mm-hmm. For the companies that are kind of hiring you guys, right? Working with Within, you mentioned you guys have more of a partner relationship. Who is your ideal customer? What does that company look like that would benefit the most from kind of partnering with you guys?
We love companies who care about the brand, obviously, value great creative. Like our creative team is, I mean, we have over 100 people on our creative team for a 400 person company. That's like new for me. It's like, what? I've never even heard of that in an agency. They do incredible work. The creative testing involved in it is like the iterations, the ideas, the concepts, the bringing it to life. Like we really want to partner with brands who want to get in there with us, whether it's like, hey, we have this, like this asset, like how can you make a great series of ads out of it? Or hey, come to us with ideas. Brands that are willing and open to like, you know, work with us on great creative campaigns and brands who aren't like just focused on next week, just focused on next month, but have a longer term play. Those are the kind of brands we do well with.
Yeah. I just noticed on you guys' LinkedIn, you had shared that you recently partnered with North Face. Is that something that, I'm like, hey, I love North Face. I saw there was lots of noise underneath it. A project like that, right? And with a brand like that, Is there something different that you guys are having to do with most like e-commerce and B2C, or is it principles are pretty much the same?
I mean, they're the same. There's obviously a level of excitement. You know, with a brand like North Face that's so recognized and so beloved, yeah. you want to make sure you're helping advance that brand, but you've already got such an incredible base that it's you don't have to reinvent anything. And you just have to make sure that their values are kind of the core. And they have great guidance, right? They always have, like, you think of brands like Patagonia, which is a competitor, but the North Face, like, these are brands that really care about the environment, which is a great thing to be able to put forward. They just have really quality stuff. It's like, as a marketer, you want to work with brands that kind of like ring true. And even though I don't work with them directly, it's just like, oh my God, we get to work with this incredible brand. It's so great. Like the enthusiasm that within when we signed them was just, it was off the charts.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can imagine. Even I got excited because I'm like, hey, this is going to be a good
logo. Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned like you guys' design team. How is the team at Within structured, the marketing team specifically?
Our marketing team. So we have a bunch of really, really talented content writers. We have some really talented designers who work to make sure that the branding is aligned with the Within branding. Doesn't work with clients, but it like they actually sort of roll up sometimes when they need to pitch out on projects. And then we have a partnerships team that's just incredible. They're not, I don't manage them, but we work really, really hand in hand to make sure that we're, the landscape is so, like, one agency can't do anything, right? Everything, I'm sorry. So, we have measurement partners. We have, obviously, like, we work with Facebook and Google, and those guys are our partners as well. TikTok, we, not just measurement, but, like, any service that we're offering to our clients that we don't have, like, in-house tech for, or we're not on an app platform, like, the Trade Desk is another big one. Those partnership teams, we share a lot of the same goals. And we want to make sure that we're staying really close contact with our partners to make sure that like our clients are testing things that, when Facebook releases a new feature, we want to test it and see if it works. So we want to be on the ground floor of that too, because early adoption betas has, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But if it does, you really have an early mover advantage. And so we always want to be on the forefront of that. So, it's a pretty standard team. The content piece is the one that I'm really excited about because we do have really, really, really talented folks who, no matter how long they've been in the industry, they know how to tell a story. And, a lot of it comes back to that.
Yeah. Which teams at Within, now that you've been there for 2 months, which teams are you directly kind of leading? And what are your plans for the next 2 months? I had a conversation recently with Maya Grossman, and we were talking about that. When you join a new company, especially as a marketing leader, what does that 3-month plan look like? Since you have just recently joined, I'm sure you already have a little bit of experience for the first 2 months leading the teams that you're leading. And now what's next for you for the next 2 months?
Yeah. Oh gosh. So the team I lead is our in-house marketing team. So I'm in charge of getting us in front of more potential clients, prospects, leads, whether that's through content, events, unique partnerships, you name it. Although our partnerships team is the lead there. But I think that our team's had some shuffling. It's grown so quickly. Like I think at the end of 2018, we weren't even 100 people strong. Now we're almost 500.
Wow.
So we've grown very, very quickly, but there's been some turnover and some shuffling and all that. And I think like as a result for the marketing team, there's still a huge opportunity to own that performance branding space. To first of all, to make people aware of like, this is a thing. You don't have to silo. Like you said, you still see on LinkedIn where people are like, performance or branding or both, or where do you invest? Like, don't think of it like that. And I think there's a lot of opportunity to teach people a new approach and to associate ourselves as first with that approach. So that's going to mean, making sure their website reflects that. That means we have presence at events where we can talk about that, where our CEO, Joe, I'm going to pronounce his name wrong. It's Y-A-K-U-E-L. It's another one of those things you have to learn in the first 3 months is how to pronounce his name. He's an incredible, like high energy, amazing ideas. I mean, this is his baby. We're independent. He's never going to sell it. Like he wants to build this agency. He wants to build it like in his vision. He's done an amazing job of getting it to where it is. I want to get him out on stage everywhere I can because he's so energetic. He's so smart. So that's a goal too. But on the other hand, like there's only one of him and there's so many smart people at the company doing really smart things that like getting them out, whether it's like, getting placements in PR, like write a column for Adweek, like you have an amazing perspective. So I think the short answer is the first couple months have been to like learn everybody's name. Joey Eckwell, I think is how you say it. He's going to yell at me if I get that wrong. Learn everybody's name, learn everybody's role, learn what we need, like what are our biggest priorities. And then the next 3 months are going to be really like, okay, let's get down to it. Like let's tackle the opportunities we have in front of us. They're the biggest. Summer is good. I mean, I'm getting into like, there's still a couple conferences. Like it was like spring conference season. And then before we have like advertising week in the fall, I think we'll have a little bit of time to devote to, but a little bit more time to devote to things like make sure their website is locked,
yep.
line up speakers, line up PR placements and things like that. But I think what you want to think of a new job when you get in is that there's so much opportunity that you don't know what to tackle first. And that's a great problem because I really believe in the company and its people. So it's like, I'm going to get us out there as much as we can.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that you actually even simplified it and mentioned get in, learn everybody's name, right? Learn everybody's role and see how we can best like optimize them. Because I think most of the conversation I've had with other marketing leaders is the same thing. You feel like you just joined and you have so much to prove, but you go in basically with almost like this full glass mentality where you have all these ideas that you're bringing, but you're really not willing to understand the agency or the company that you're working at. Mm-hmm. And the roles of the people, because you also don't want to, you know, piss a lot of people off if you're going in there with your own.
Right. And I think that's a real, I mean, you want to prove value, but you don't want to like step on everybody's feet.
Totally.
Yeah. And it is about, I'm sure I've stepped on toes already. Yeah. You know, you're in another agency for 9 years. And the amount of times I've said and had to edit myself from saying, well, at 3Q, we would like, nobody cares. Unless you have a success story where you're like, I know this is going to work. But yeah, it's like, you have to kind of orient yourself within the culture that you're in. So, mm-hmm. Pun not intended. And the culture here is awesome. It's very fast paced. It's very collaborative. It's very, one of the things I did that I'm most proud of is I worked with our community manager for social media, who's also on my team. She's awesome. Her name's Bailey. And I was like, Bailey, you know what I think we need on our Slack channels? Because we did have it at 3Q. And that was one of the first things I was like, well, at 3Q. I was like, we need to have a pets channel where people can post pictures of, yep. you know, their dog, their pet. She posted, and that channel has been like, you know, agency life can be stressful. Yep. If you want to take like today, one of our recruiting directors just got a labradoodle or a golden doodle or some kind of doodle. So now she's posting pictures of her brand new puppy on the pets channel. And everybody's like, it's the best Friday I've ever had. Like, we're getting puppy content. We've had bunnies. Pigs, horses, ducks, like I thought it was gonna be like puppies, but it's like all the animals. So like that kind of thing, you know, especially with being all spread out, it, you know, part of the marketing team's job too is like being the cheerleaders for the company, like getting people excited, getting people on board, helping, having people saying like, I want to contribute to what you're doing. Cause ultimately we're not the subject matter experts. We're not working in the campaigns of the clients. So we want to get people who are like working so hard to make their clients successful. We want to say, okay, so with that 1 free hour a week you might have, you want to contribute to marketing. We want to get them on board. And, you know, one way to do that is just to get everybody excited about what's going on and to give them a stress break with puppies.
100%. So I was like literally smiling ear to ear when you were telling me that, because we also have a, like a pet channel on our Slack. And actually this morning we had one of my coworkers, Seb, he posted a picture of his cat sunbathing. And so right underneath that, people started posting their pictures.
That's all it takes, right? Like there could be like a, you know, you post one picture on Wednesday and people respond, yeah. and there's a couple of days and somebody posts a picture. All of a sudden, everybody's got to post. Like you're supposed to think your pet is the kid, right?
I was actually going through my phone trying to find pictures of my dog so I can post, but then I had to prepare for this. So right after this conversation.
You're posting pictures, yeah. I was like, you guys, this is going to be the most popular Slack channel. Just trust me. And we've got people who don't have pets who are like, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love like the chickens and the pigs. Like that's the kind of stuff that I also think, yeah, working a remote team, if you're also not having fun, and I'm also with you with when you're working in a marketing team, the goal isn't just to like keep your heads down with your own team. You want to build rapport. You want to build relationships with the other people in your team. Else you're not going to be interacting with them. And when it's time, when you actually need them and you need to
talk. Right. To like, why do I want to help you again?
Yeah, but you've already kind of built that. And that's why even at OpenSense, we've done like happy hours on Fridays. We play like, I think we recently started playing Wordle.
I got into today.
Yeah, yeah. And gosh, I forgot the name of the other game that we played. But we definitely try to have a little bit more fun because it does get everyone closer. And that is
it's a grind, right? Like, you know, the tech and agencies, it's you know, it's part of it where it's very fast paced. It's very, especially working from home, it's hard to get boundaries of like, can I really log off? Like the computer's right there.
Yeah.
It's if you can provide those moments of levity or, you know, de-stressing during the day, like that's huge, right? Like you can't have those water cooler conversations if you're, even if you're going back to the office, like, I mean, we were talking like a lot of the teams are distributed now, which is great for people like me who are in Vermont and don't have access to a bunch of agency jobs in Burlington. So it's awesome that it's distributed, but at the same time, it's you have to make some adjustments in how you go through your work day.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And same with us, like we're a totally distributed team. And if we're not having those and we're not making time for like more cultural stuff and just getting to know your team. And I've even noticed, I feel most people are grinding much harder when there is, when you are working at home, because you feel like you can like, I'll look at the clock sometimes, it'll be 7 o'clock. I'm like, man, I haven't even moved my legs. I got to get up.
Or the other problem is you cook dinner and you're like, well, but there's the computer. Yeah, like it's right there. I could just check email real quick.
Yeah. So I love that you guys are doing that. And one of the things that you had mentioned before, even you started sharing a little bit about like kind of the fun stuff, you mentioned that you guys are also focusing a lot on content, partnerships and events, especially I think with performance branding, since a lot of, it seems like a lot of people know about it. A lot of people don't know about it, so they don't know the value of it. Are you having to spend some time on building out more educational content around performance and positioning your team and the perspectives that they have and kind of tying it back to within?
Yeah, absolutely. That's really going to be part of the focus. That's how we can differentiate our content. And I think we've got a chance to go to do that. But like they're writing these great articles about like, what is affiliate marketing and what's a successful affiliate marketing, which is great. And then the next step is going to be like, what does that look like with within's methodology? And how does that tie into performance branding? Like, how can you do affiliate that, you know, connects dots and stuff and isn't just sitting at the end of the funnel? Mm-hmm. So for sure, like there's that, that is a big, like, how do we apply our own lens to everything? Mm-hmm. One of the other things, and I don't know why this question made me think of it, but one thing we do, we call it lifecycle marketing, where it's basically like, you know, retaining customers after you acquire them, like keeping the engagement going. That I think is huge. And like with the cost of acquiring customers, just getting higher, retaining customers is a focus that I'm really happy that we have as an agency too, that we offer that. So it's like, not just like, doesn't just end when you acquire the customer by segmenting and saying, okay, cool. Like now they bought from the brand, they're going to be loyal, but it's like, actually, what are we doing to engage them at the other end? So that's part of performance too, is like extend that customer experience. So make sure that this person is always a customer. Don't just target somebody you think will be a customer for a long time. Like keep engaging, like do it as long as you can and as profitably as you can. So like, to me, that's another part of the performance.
Mm-hmm. That's, I was spending a little bit of time even researching about the buyer's journey, life cycle. And there's so much out there where it's all very inconsistent and different terminology for it. But really it's this, the principle is the same. How do you keep the customers with their, and I think it's a little bit different. I always think of things in like more of a SaaS perspective
that opens a subscription and all that. Yeah.
So you think about what are the things that we can do right now when a customer renewal is coming up? How do we re-engage them? How do we keep them happy? What are the things that you guys are noticing that work really well for your customers, especially after the sale, right? To keep them around.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's things like retention programs, loyalty programs, you know, exclusivity that you can offer. I mean, we've been talking a lot internally about things like NFTs, which are, I don't think, but we have a client who's called Dapper Labs and Topshot MBA, like they're in that space, which is really, it's fun and confusing and like brand new, and we're all trying to get our heads around it. But I think like, if you look at Web 3.0, that's really going to be a place where you can interact with people on a different level and even incorporate them more into like or yourself more into their lives. And I think like that's something that's going to be, you know, it's speculative now. Is it going to be like, you know, the Netflix, like when they split out whatever it was, they split out their DVD delivery from their streaming service and that didn't last very long. Is it going to be like that, where it's like, okay, it sounds great at the time, kind of, and then it's going to fade away? Or is it going to be like Facebook, right? Where everybody's like, I don't know if this is really that good for. It seems kind of cool. And now it's a utility. And, you know, I would say like, I'm leaning towards the latter for sure. It's one of those things where, you know, if I were working directly with a brand, I would encourage them to get in it now and try to figure out like all the different touch points. Mm-hmm. Because it's, you know, it's people who have been gaming for a long time. Gen Xers are actually kind of interested in Web 3.0, like younger generations for sure. And these are people who are going to be spending their money for years and years and years. Like, if you can engage them on another level, even in another kind of web dimension, like that's a good play, I think. So I think what we think of now is, you know, we're doing email and text and stuff like that, but I think it may really kind of develop into something different down the road.
Oh, totally. Before I was working here, I was actually working at an agency, a crypto blockchain agency.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I also have a couple of NFTs, which haven't.
I was like, why are you talking to me?
I'm waiting for them to moon, and I don't think that they are. But it's so interesting that you mentioned that even Web3, the more I try to wrap my head around it and learn about it too, because I also try to stay like, I'm trying to stay two steps ahead. But I have some friends who work in it, who work in crypto, who work with NFTs. And I ask them all the time, like, what does marketing look like in Web3? Because right now it just, it is so difficult to wrap your head around and try to figure it out right now, which is what people probably felt back in the day when, you know, Facebook was here and when
when Facebook finally released ads, it was like, it was even going to work. And they didn't for a while because they didn't have like custom audiences. Yeah, it's, you know, in talking to the director on our team who's working with the Dapper Labs folks, and so he would be our in-house like NFT Web3 expert. It was really interesting hearing from him because he's like, there's these niche communities. You know where to go. You can go on Reddit, TikTok, wherever. There's always going to be a small community pretty much wherever you go that's interested in crypto, web. Some of it's like artistic communities and there's this intersection. But they, if they're already interested, they're very plugged in and most of them are a little bit affluent at least. Mm-hmm. So like the trick is for right now to blitz those guys with like awareness about NFTs. And then awareness leads to conversions like that. Like the buyer's journey is so short and so concentrated towards awareness. And then it's like, okay, NFTs, this, you know, here's a sale. It's going out in like 2 days. So everybody's like, oh my God, yeah, I'm going to scramble to get it. And then it's done. It's just, it's like, yeah, it's such a different like orientation of marketing. And it's almost like FOMO marketing, right? Like
it is, yeah. Yeah.
And I'm not sure it's always going to be like that. I think the appetite gets bigger and broader. It's going to be different. But for now, it's like the people who are like yelling the loudest are going to sell their stuff.
100%. It is all, I know when we were there, it was all FOMO. It was all FOMO, which is scary, obviously, especially for mainstream investors who don't know much. And it's all hype. It is all hype building. One of the things
that you just said that you had two NFTs and I'm like, well, you probably at least, you know, what if you didn't buy them and one of them hit? Like you probably feel better that you tried, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing.
Totally, totally. And it's like, so you always want them to, like, now I'm like, I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to stress about it. But learning and see, like, I see it now as even like just artwork. That's what initially I came into it thinking, oh, I'll make bank. Now I'm like, oh, it's an awesome artwork. Like, you know, so,
right. It can be a collectible. It can be an investment. It can even be like, you know, where some of the brands are doing things like get an NFT and then turn it into a real life experience.
Totally.
Like, this is stuff that it's cool stuff. I mean, it's versatile and everything exactly, use cases.
Exactly. One of the things we mentioned earlier about things recycling, it's the same thing when we had like, I had a conversation with another friend about this. It's like Pokemon cards and baseball.
Totally.
Cards.
A friend of mine, one of the content writers, is like, it's kind of like Beanie Babies. Like, you get a little Beanie Baby, like, and you think, like, either I keep it or it's worth thousands of dollars someday. And maybe that doesn't pan out, but at the time,
Yeah, that's one way to think about it. Another thing that I found very interesting. So we're going to be at HubSpot Inbound Conference. And as a part of one of the sponsorship packages we have, there is an option to have your branding all over their little digital environment that they've created. And it's very much, it reminds me of, I forgot the name of it. There was like a roller coaster world in the crypto community. I don't know the name of it, but you can go in and you can purchase digital clothing for your avatar. And then they're right. The real estate, Netflix. And
the real estate. I know, it's crazy.
It's insane. And I'm actually already seeing now brands like HubSpot and other brands are starting to build that in like Web 2, and they're also purchasing land on Web 3. So I can spend so much time talking about this because
oh my gosh. Yeah. But I think going back to like what we started talking about at the beginning, it's like the tenets are, where's your audience?
Yeah.
How do they want to interact? What's important to them? What story are you telling? And with NFT and Web3, it's like you tell a story in like a second.
Yeah.
But otherwise, there goes the moment. But like, yeah, it's the same stuff. It's just different. Like this feels to me like it's beyond 3D. Like I'm still, how you buy real estate online, but you know, that I'm still like, okay, but we're going to have to get used to it, get invested in it. I mean, the Gen X thing, I think a lot of people were like, the people who played like, what is it, Second City or Second Life or something, like it was a gaming. Yeah. Those folks are like, oh yeah, I'm all about like Web3. Like I can't understand. So it's not as generational as I would have thought. I would have thought like, yeah, okay, if you're over 30, you're gonna have no idea about this stuff, but it's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, no, that's true. And it's cool that you guys are working with clients like that, where you're now having to think about it because there's a huge market for it. I know when I was working at that company, there were tons of crypto brands that wanted help writing white papers. Now it's different, right? Now it's not about the white papers anymore. It's about, and back then it was about like security tokens, and it's changed so much. And that was 2017. And now we're
at— Oh, wow. Yes. Like 5 years must be, you're into like the 15th iteration or something.
Totally. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, there's still the educational component for people, like, but I feel like every 2 months I see numbers of people who have heard of crypto or have crypto or whatever.
Yeah.
And the numbers are growing so fast. It's like in 2017, I'm sure it was like in the single digits. And now it's like, I feel like a third of my friends are like, have you seen Dogecoin? Like, come on.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Even my uncle, who I can't even have like a mainstream conversation with him, but he'll talk to me about Bitcoin. I'm like, how do you know? So funny.
Yep.
To kind of go back to our conversation now, one of the things that actually I really wanted to touch on, just because you've also had lots of experience growing and scaling teams. One of the things that I also run your profile, you've grown a team from 25 to 350 employees. So this goes into like, we're going to move into the fun portion, the questions that I really want to know. If you had 2x of staff, budget, or time, which one would you choose and what would you do with it?
Oh, boy. Well, I didn't grow a team to 350. I helped grow 3Q, like by helping brand new clients and stuff. So I don't want anybody to think I've managed 350 people, but not money outside of personnel. Because I think like if you have money, you spend it because you're like, cool. But if you don't have the people to actually make the most use of technology, for instance, we work with OpenSense. We've vastly underutilized your tool. Mm-hmm. And that's not the tool's fault. It's not the capability's fault. We haven't had anybody in place for a while to look at it and say like, what should we be doing? So for sure, like tech is amazing and can make your job easier if you have the right people running it. So I would say not just money, time. Oh boy. It's between time and people, because people can, you know, if they have the right skill sets and they can take over things, will give you more time. And I think it's people, but it's the right people who are like, you know, in this industry, it's like you come in with a skill set that you're real good at. You can take over right away, even if it's problem solving. To be a person who has a skill set or a role where people are like, if I need this, I go to that person. You come in with that and you learn, you're ready to learn everything else. Because like what you and I've been talking about for the last 5 minutes, that was so far off the map, like when I started out in this stuff, right? And if you don't learn and grasp new challenges as you go and encourage your team to do the same thing, yeah, you're going to fall behind pretty quickly. So I think like the right people and trying to carve out time for them to learn. Like take 10% of your time and say like, I'm going to catch up on whatever I think is going to be important next quarter or whatever, at least stay that far ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. And one of the things that we're also trying to think about even at OpenSense, and I think most people are, when you're hiring, right, the right people, besides the fact that you want them to work and have a certain skill set for the job, also thinking a little bit more beyond that job, where does this person have the capability or the interest to also be presented as a thought leader? Mm-hmm. Because that's also a new, I'm not going to say it's like trending, but if we can hire someone in IT who's like, yeah, I want to lead a podcast or I want to do something like that, then you're doing so much more and you're helping them get, you're extracting more value from them and helping position them.
Oh, for sure. It's like, you know, and I think good bosses and good managers will be really upfront about being like, look, we're not in the 40s. Like nobody keeps the same job for 30 years anymore.
Yeah.
I want to get you to a point where somebody wants to hire you at a level 2 times higher than you are now, or 2 levels higher than you are now. And if that's not us, then, you know, and it's a great opportunity to go for it. But that means you have to build your career as you go. And you know, training is a big part of that. Learning is a big part of that. Like, yeah, absolutely.
So now moving on to career stuff, what's the biggest lesson you've learned in your career that you would basically want to impart that knowledge on someone else?
Oh, and this may be like, personal, I think it's definitely personal to me. Like some other people may be like, nah, I don't have a problem. For me, it's like, you want to do so many things. There's not that much time. There are 50,000 things in a day you could do. Speed is important, but I've learned that sometimes it's way better just to take a breath and be like, is that the right thing right now? Before just charging ahead. Everybody loves crossing things off a list. I love crossing. It's so satisfying. Or like you go into a sign, you click complete, like seeing that. Like it's like gamification, right? It's there's satisfaction in doing that. But like, sometimes it's just important to say, okay, is this the right move right now? Or are there other things I should think about? Like that's something I have to try to remember every day. So it's, I don't think it's changed my life yet, but the realization has dawned on me over the last couple of years, like, take a break, not even a break, or go walk the dog. Like, sometimes you get your very best thoughts creatively, work-wise, when you can't write them down and you can't get to them right away. Like, how many times have you been like driving where you can't do anything and you get these great ideas and you're like, I can't do anything with these right now. So your mind just goes, or you're in the shower and you're like, oh, I have a great idea, but I'm not near my computer, so I can't write it down. But you need to take that time to just let your mind run.
Yeah.
And that's another thing I've kind of realized. When I'm walking the dog, it's not necessarily a break because I'm still thinking about work and get some really good ideas. You got to step back from the computer sometimes. Otherwise, we're always going to have the same fear.
Yeah, no, that is so true. I've gotten some ideas like in a dream.
Scary. Yeah, I think I know everybody's woken up at 2 a.m. and been like, I want to write something down. Dreaming about it, though, that's next level.
Honestly, though, when you wake up and you're trying to remember that dream,
open
your eyes. It is. And I remember I kept a notebook because I'm like, oh, I want to have a dream again. But it is so challenging, even remembering dreams. But yeah, well, you're so right about that. I feel like when you were working in an office and working with your coworkers, I would get those. We would get our most creative moments having beers after work.
Totally.
And you know, you do that, and you also don't want to bore your, like, I don't want to bore my partner, you know, Rez, and be like, hey, like, he's like, you're always talking about work, stop.
The other thing about drinking beer after work is that every idea seems great. You're like, this is the best thing after 2 years, every idea is the best one you've ever had.
100%. But I do like that, at least walking the dog and taking yourself out of your office and going, doing something fun, and you catch yourself keeping a notebook with you. I love that. And that kind of very nicely leads into my next, how do you, if you do, maintain work-life balance?
It's hard working from home. I mean, that's, you know, it's one of the things we covered. I try to tell people at the end of the day, I'm logging off. I have Slack on my phone, which is a really big, like, I don't know if I want to keep it on my phone because it's so easy to check. And Slack is like, so like, if it's important enough, they can text you, they can email you, whatever. So I do try to limit like the access I give to myself. But it's, you know, it's a game. Like, there's so many things you want to do, you know, get out of the house, honestly. Like, and when you work from home, it's like very easy to get inertia, especially, I mean, it's April now, but in Vermont in February, like, you know, it's, you don't always want to go out. Like, it's cold out there. It's, you know, it's snowing, but yeah, just getting out, making sure you're being intentional about spending time with other people, not thinking about work for a while. Mm-hmm. My weekends are my weekends. Like, I may check emails to make sure I'm on top of things for Monday, but I would never ask anybody to work on Saturday or Sunday. Then now this is going to be recorded, so my team wrote me on that. Like, you just need breaks. I mean, if you don't take breaks, you're going to burn out. I mean, burnout is common enough in agencies and tech and all that stuff. Like, and I think a lot of just not drawing boundaries.
Yeah, no, I love that. And especially if you are a leader, which you know, you are, and you're doing.
Yeah, if my team sends me online all day, every day, like, they're going to think they can't log off, which is,
Yeah, it is super stressful. Last two questions. What's one thing you think marketers should stop doing that they are doing right now or start doing that they're not?
I would start poking around the metaverse, because if they don't, they're taking a bet that it's not going to be a big thing, which is great if it's not. But if it is, you don't want to be left like trying to scramble and explain it to clients like why you don't have an offering. That, yeah, that's one thing I do. I mean, it's, you know, and it's kind of like in 2011 saying like you probably want to get a real presence on Facebook. Like, they're going to start, you know, developing ads, even if it wasn't true at the time and you're not making revenue from it at the time. I think like get those seeds ready.
Yeah, that, or like TikTok is the most recent example.
Everyone
is talking about TikTok, and just
absolutely like it was. Yeah, and there was enough like, you know, kind of noise about like privacy issues on TikTok, and I mean, like, owned by the Chinese government and all that stuff. Like, if you listen to that and just put up a hard wall, like, your clients would have missed out on big time engagement opportunities.
Yeah, 100%. Last one, who are other marketers that you look up to, or maybe someone that you would recommend us reach out and kind of bring them into this conversation?
Oh man, David Rominski. He was the founder of 3Q. He was my contact to bring me in there. He's just the most thoughtful guy about like issues above and beyond marketing. He's always a great conversation. Like, I would definitely reach out to him. He's got like a different way of looking at things too. I think it would be really like, I've never come away from a conversation with David of any length and been like, I didn't learn anything. So he's great. I definitely would reach out to him.
We absolutely love inviting marketers like you, especially with the kind of perspective that you're bringing. This is also the first time on Growth Marketing Camp that anyone's mentioned metaverse or NFTs.
No kidding. Oh, that will be the last. And if it's not, I'm not like a technophile either. Like, I'm, you know, go kicking and screaming into like, I mean, Yeah, my team can tell you that much already. Be like, if we need something like on social media, don't ask Hillary about the mechanics. But it's just, I think it's just such a, it's so big, it's going to be really hard to ignore it. And like, sure, late adopters are going to,
Not even that. It's like, considering how quickly things have changed, right? Even we discussed in the last 11 years, since 2017, how quickly that's changed. I bet you in 5 years, it's going to hit us in the face if we don't prepare for it now. But this was such an amazing conversation. Absolutely love chatting with you. Thank you again for joining. And for everybody else who's listening, how can they connect with you?
LinkedIn's very easy. We had a conversation before this even started. You know, I'm trying to sneak across the border to Canada if I can. Life's a little bit crazy down here in the States. So keep an eye out for me in Quebec, Vermonter with Bat Quebecois. But yeah, LinkedIn's usually the best.
Definitely LinkedIn, or if you decide to ever come up to Vancouver, then I'll just hit you up.
that for sure. And we'll take you up on the beer threat and as well.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have good conversation with beer or wine. Love it. Thanks again. And we will catch you guys next time.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to Growth Marketing Camp. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you would give it a quick 5-star rating or share it with a friend or colleague looking to get a little more inspiration for their next campaign. If you want to learn more about the company behind the show, head to opensense.com. That's OPENSENSE.com. We'll catch you on the next episode.